I thought we might have been sold a bill of goods, that we were coming to a farm called Dusty Goat Farm, but that you would be mostly growing microgreens here. But lo and behold, there's the goats.
Yeah, that's Peach and Rue.
Aww. Their goat habitat is spectacular. They have a house that's nicer than my house. It's like a, I don't know, it's like a, almost like a gingerbread housey, mystical dollhouse.
One, I guess, they grew out of right behind.
No, that's actually a chicken coop that I found that just happens to match it.
Oh, perfect.
Wow. Yeah.
And we're in East Longmeadow at Dusty Goat Farm with Aaron Sewell, who's the farmer, and Claire Morneau from CESA, the local hero folks. Now it makes sense that you're called Dusty Goat Farm because there's these old dusty goats. Yeah. But that is not what you're famous for farming. What is it that you're growing here mostly?
Microgreens and microherbs.
Where does the dust come from?
When Peach and her sister, who is no longer with us, was new, I came out here, and there used to be a truck parked right in front. So when I came out the back door, I see this big cloud of, I thought it was smoke, so I rush over there, and it's Peach, and she's squirming around doing a dust bath, and then she gets up and she shakes, and I'm like, oh my gosh. So I was like, that's perfect. If I ever have a farm, which happened the next year, that's what I'm going to name it.
And how it happened is kind of interesting. So we're in what feels like a residential neighborhood in East Longmeadow, although we've learned from you that there's other farms that are secretly here, and we drove by the East Longmeadow Community Garden, but this was a pandemic-era decision that you made, right, Erin?
Yes, yep. I was actually managing a construction company locally, and I got laid off in July. And by August, I was thinking that I should probably start growing vegetables for my family. And I, seeing as I was suffering from late-stage Lyme disease and all that kind of stuff, and it was taking a heavy toll on my health. So I knew going to the grocery store on a regular basis was not going to be an option for me. So I started growing microgreens in trays, thinking, okay, we can eat all this. And I'm making 3 trays a week. And by the time I see how big it gets, I'm like, oh God, I'm not going to be able to eat all this. I'm going to have to start sharing it with people. And that's exactly what I did. And people were like, I will pay you if you can make more of this. So I just started ordering seeds. And by the next January, the following January, I was at the farmer's market in Northampton.
What sort of scale are you on now? Like how many pounds or however you measure it are you producing?
Well, right now I'm probably up to 45 trays at the moment because I stopped doing farmer's markets and I wanted to focus more on retail and restaurants for now. So in the next few weeks, I'm hoping to hear from Big Y when I can deliver my first orders to them in 5 different stores around here. Then I do some home deliveries, 10 of them a week or so. You know, I have a few restaurants, a handful of restaurants that I do, a few downtown Springfield. Every week I bring them a pound of basic salad mix and see you next week, you know.
And this is you delivering. Like, it's not like you're not going through a service like Marty's or something like that where somebody's coming and picking it up. It's just you driving around.
Talk about microgreens. So if people have heard of it maybe or aren't familiar with it, what separates a microgreen from a regular salad green or what are the benefits?
Well, you can actually compare microgreens to sprouts first. So sprouts, as a lot of people know, they're grown in water. There are some complications because of the water aspect, so it's a little iffy. But as you know, the nutrients are in the seed, so sprouts are very healthy. They're kind of like sprouts, except that they're grown in soil, and they get a source of light for roughly about between 4 and 7 days, which gives that starts the photosynthesis process. And that makes the nutrients much more bioavailable to your body to be able to use them more, you know, cellular repair and stuff like that. Broccoli, kale are going to be your most nutritious. Broccoli also has like its own little ecosystem. It's incredibly intuitive for a little tiny vegetable. You have all the nutrients packed in those little packages. So if you're eating an ounce of broccoli, you're getting between, they say, 4 and 40 times more nutrients per ounce in that 1 ounce than you would get in an ounce of broccoli. 4 and 40 times more.
Because it's in microgreen form?
Yeah. Eat the babies.
Yeah, I know. I didn't want to say it, but it seems like the thing to do.
Because all the nutrients are in the seed, you're able to, if you can capture it in a smaller package, then you get all those just kind of condensed. It's like a little superfood.
And do they look like little broccolis?
If you put a broccoli seed in the ground and you let it grow for 2 weeks, the little tiny leaves on top, they're called cotyledons. They're so cute.
Uh-huh.
And it's before the true leaf, the leaf that you're going to see on the big plant.
So you're not eating like what looks like a broccoli tree. You're eating what looks like a broccoli leaf.
Yes. And actually, if you eat it when it gets a little, looks a little bit more like broccoli, it's going to start being more bitter as it gets older.
Mm-hmm. Just like all of us.
Eat the babies. Where are you growing the microgreens? Because I see a plot behind.
Yep.
But that can't be, those are too tall.
All of the microgreens are grown in the basement, and I can bring you guys there. That's actually 10,000 cloves of garlic planted by Evan at Nightjar Farm in Chicopee.
Oh, yeah, nice.
You're using your land to help other farmers who are doing sort of the urban farming thing too?
Yeah, and he does the garlic fest. So him and a few other farmers, they like just plant as much garlic as possible, and I wasn't going to use it this winter, so I said, sure, do it.
That's great. And then you have this, before we go check out the microgreens, you have this white trailer over here that you're growing fun things in, too.
I can show it to you.
Yes.
I don't have anything growing in it right now because I had to do a little bit of repair, painting. By the time I got all that done, there was like 5 feet of snow on the ground. So I was like, I'm not going back there until the springtime.
So it's this giant white trailer.
And we're actually having a paint party. I have three local artists who are coming. Camille St. Gabriel, Nick King, and Courtney Frobel. They're going to paint the outside for me.
Are they going to put a mural on it or just paint it?
Yep.
So we're in what looks like a Breaking Bad meth lab.
You're goddamn right.
But I'm hoping it's not.
I mean, it looks like more like mushrooms / hydroponics.
This is where you're growing mushrooms, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Yay!
Gourmet mushrooms, yes. I have a little bit more to learn first. I bought this trailer from Michael at Grown Up Farm.
Yeah.
And it was all outfitted and stuff, but we have some learning before we start.
Well, that's something to look forward to.
Exactly.
We're at Dusty Goat Farm in East Longmeadow with Aaron Sewell, who started out this farm during COVID. Was there anything here in this residential neighborhood that was farmy, or did you bring all the farmy things to it, in this yard in particular?
Yeah, no, I mean, all of this stuff, this was just a residential house. I don't even think they used the second acre for anything except for, like, bonfires.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You were saying before that you had Lyme disease, and you have tried to eat your way into better health using the microgreens. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The microgreens are a huge part of my recovery, just because they're superfoods, essentially. They're like little ninjas, and they've really helped me bounce back. They've made it to where the medicine absorbs. I take a lot of antibiotics and anti-malarial stuff like that for my illnesses, so it just helps with absorption.
You guys like dogs?
Yeah. Look at you guys.
Hi.
I have another dog over here. She might bark.
So we're in your living room, and there's a poster on the wall, artwork, that says you are what you eat, and your vegetables are what they eat, and soil is what it eats, and it gets kind of complicated after that, but this sort of thing goes on and on forever. You are everything. Take care. I love
that's
that.
Actually by a local artist at the Northampton Market. He carves them out of, like, big stamps.
Oh, like woodblock press?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Very cool. This is where my friend does sound healing in here.
What's sound healing?
Steph?
Yeah.
You want to explain sound healing?
You're on the radio, if nobody told you.
Tell them about sound. Max.
Oh, this is my protective dog. She's very nice.
That's part of the sound healing.
Yeah,
the barking.
I'm not sure how we're going to mix her in.
What's your name?
Steph Rondinelli.
You do sound healing here inside on this tiny, like, residential farm.
Yes, I do. We have a lot of plans to incorporate sound healing with Aaron's microgreens and make this kind of a wellness area.
But what's something we can look at or listen to for sound healing if, you know?
Well, let me come in here.
Since radio is a sound healer.
Yeah, maybe we can put some sound healing on the radio. Better than the leaf blowers that were outside.
We've known each other since fifth grade.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we're fellow musicians. We're in a band together. We have a jam room that we jam on Saturday nights.
What's the name of your band?
Lady Band.
I like it.
So it's just three of us. There's another person here who I've known since kindergarten.
Hi.
Buck. Hi. She's a local comedian. So we have people here all the time working on getting this place going.
Are these singing bowls?
Yes. These are quartz frosted crystal singing bowls. The way sound healing works, so when I strike this bowl, the frequency in the bowl is going to play. Whatever we're applying it to, like a person, the cells in their body are going to vibrate to match the frequency that I'm applying to it.
It's like how my cycle matches up.
Yeah. So I either strike it or I can rub the side of it. So these are, I don't know how crazy you want me to get into this. I could get very crazy into it. So I have all of the notes in the C scale that I like to do sound baths with. I will, I can sing along to it. I can chant to it. I can add other tools. I have tuning forks. It's pretty cool. I'm going to do it here, but I also do like mobile service too.
Sounds so relaxing. Thanks for showing us your singing bowl.
It was nice to meet everyone.
We're going to go down here. I'll hold these guys back.
All right, we'll go downstairs. Now going where the microgreens are growing here at Dusty Goat Farm in a residential home in a residential neighborhood in East Longmeadow. Okay, now then there's this little tiny hydroponic grow light room in here.
It's not hydroponic, right?
Oh, it's soil. It's not. They're in soil.
Oh, yeah, right. But what kind of lights are these?
These are LED T5s.
And that's enough light for them to want to
grow. Yeah, it's perfect.
What are these super vibrant, bright reds?
Those are beets.
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
And they're beet microgreens, so you'd eat them before they turned, like, rooted and turned into the root vegetable.
Exactly.
And do you get the same nutritional benefits plus from that you would have?
Yes, definitely get more, because the nutrients aren't as spread out as they would be in a normal-sized beet. Those are cantaloupe right there, if you want to snap one up.
That's so cool.
Oh, yeah, you can kind of taste the cantaloupe.
You can taste the cantaloupe.
In the tiny, it's literally like a little tiny sprouty-looking microgreen, and you can see how this will someday be cantaloupe.
You can taste how it will be cantaloupe.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So what are the conditions you have to maintain for this operation?
So I like to keep it right around between 70 and 75, but the most important is the humidity. So it's got to be below 50. Hopefully I'll be getting a mini split system with a grant so that it's a little easier to maintain.
Why is the humidity important?
Because the stems are all clustered so together, it will keep a lot of moisture within those stems, and then that will create an unfortunately kind of a gross environment. And you get mold and, you know, but I mean, a lot of the mold that comes in there, it doesn't go up the stem, so you can save maybe part of the tray if it's not close, but it can ruin whole trays.
When you decided you wanted to do this, you were saying you were running a construction company, got laid off, you've got Lyme disease, COVID is happening, you're trying to stay healthy and create a farm in the place where you live. How did you make that initial step? Like, what? How did you get the resources to start a farm?
Well, at the time of the pandemic, I was actually still married to my kid's dad. He was making good money. I was making good money at the construction company that I was managing. And so we really just pooled what we had together. And a lot of these shelves I was finding on Marketplace. So, you know, it was just piecing it all together. I had to buy the lights and the fans brand new, but a lot of it is, you know, previously used.
But you're hoping for some grants to kind of expand what you're doing here at Dusty Goat, right?
Yes. I would love to find a grant that would help me with a watering automation in here and some air just to make it a little bit more consistent with the airflow and the temperature and stuff, so I don't have to keep watching it and adjusting.
Do people tend to ask for specific varieties based on the health benefits, or are people looking for specific flavors? How do you choose what to grow? What are people looking for?
Our most popular is definitely the broccoli, and that is because of all of the additional things. Like I said, it's got like its own almost like an ecosystem. That one's kale. It's actually, broccoli is right next to you a little further up.
And it doesn't look like broccoli. It looks like sprouts.
I can actually tell because of the color of the seeds. So the broccoli seeds are brown. The kale is like almost so dark it's black.
How many seeds are you growing per season? Because like if you're doing this, and I'm assuming you're only getting one crop per seed, you've got to refresh that then. Like how much seeds are you purchasing per season?
I buy them by at least 5 pounds at a time.
That's...
So I have buckets of seeds I can show you, actually. Yes.
Leaving the microgreen climate-controlled room back into the regular part of the basement.
So
you have just buckets of seeds.
Buckets of seeds, yep. So I order, especially like the salad mix, I order probably every month and a half. I'll order. They're expensive, too, and they've gone up significantly in the last probably 4 years, at least 150%.
What's caused the spike, do you know?
I don't know. I don't know if it's because a lot of the farms, it seems like the seed farms got bought up by bigger companies. I don't know why. My soil went up almost double as well.
Do you have a favorite? It seems like you're partial to broccoli. Are there other favorites?
I love broccoli. I love the cantaloupe. I absolutely love the spicy salad mix that I make. It's a basic salad mix, which includes a few different blends of lettuce and red acre cabbage. I do a two blend of different radishes. I do purple rambo radish and red stem radish. And then I do a spicy oriental mustard. People go crazy for it. It's my favorite. It is my absolute favorite. But I could eat a whole tray of radish if I didn't need it for something.
If you weren't trying to sell it and make a living.
You've got some really fun other things that I don't usually see sprouts of, like speckled pea. Like, you see pea, but, like, it's not always the same. And then oat sprouts.
Yep. I actually use the oats for, it's a cat grass blend. It's oats, wheatgrass. The cats love it. And then I usually will grow, like, a little patch for my goats, too.
Yeah. Oats for the goats.
Yep.
Raw is the way to go?
Raw is definitely the way to go. If you use it on hot food, put it right at the end, right before you eat it, because it will definitely wilt a little bit. And you really want that crisp newness with the greens. You really want to keep the integrity of it.
Did you grow up on farms?
Actually, no. My grandfather always had a really big garden, and people always came and got his vegetables because he always grew way more than we could eat. Even though I feel like I didn't really listen all that carefully, I remember a lot of what he said. When I started growing stuff, I was like, I need to sucker the tomatoes. I remember that, you know? So,
there's a sucker born every day.
Yes.
Only during tomato season.
So I kind of dedicate my farm to my grandfather. He was like, you know, he was like my father figure growing up. He's a great
Maybe
guy.
Maybe he's the dusty goat.
Exactly.
A dusty goat farm.
There you go.
I don't know your grandfather well enough to say whether or not he'd approve of
my
that.
My grandfather was a dusty old goat dude.
How about that gnarly old goat dude?
He'd laugh about it.
You said you are hoping to build a little farm stand here on your property, and right now you're mostly at retailers and restaurants, that sort of thing. What are your long-term plans and hopes?
I'm kind of hoping that I can talk somebody into creating another food hub around here that farmers can bring their stuff and sell. You know, maybe it would be a place where we could accept HIP. We can have buses going so that people can get picked up in different areas. And I'm actually hoping, I've been looking at Farm Truck. It's a grant to supply farmers with trucks that they can literally pack all of their produce in, and they just open it up and it's like a store right there. So that's actually my goal for next year when I have my greenhouse, my good new greenhouse that's not going to collapse on me. When I have that one up and I'm producing all of my big vegetables, that's really my plan. I want to fill all of the food deserts and just make it to where there are no issues. I want all of the farms that want to be involved in selling their stuff to be able to sell it. And I would love to create a place that would happen.